and NASA would have to get a ride. They're not, surely not going to use the Russians, but they could use Jeff Bezos' New Glenn. They could use SpaceX. They could even use the Atlas V to get to where they got to go. But, you know, you have to develop some kind of a platform to work off of, to dock with it. It does have now a docking tower on the bottom of it. So they could do that. Somebody would have to, you know, foot the bill. And I'm not hearing anything like that. But I know they could do it. You know, you'd have to have the commitment. And I'm not seeing that. And it'll be a shame to see that thing fail. I mean, we'll have other telescopes to test. And then there's WFIRST they plan on sending up. That should be good. Kind of like will supplement the loss of the Hubble.
So it sounds like Hubble's just got to hang in there until 2019, 2020. Have we heard of any failures of any hardware on Hubble since the last repair mission? And it seems like the last repair mission was quite a number of years ago, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, wow, I think that was what? Was it 2009? I think I remember 2009. The last shuttle mission was 2011. So I believe it was 2009. It was called STS-125. If you ever look up STS-125, I think that was the last service Hubble mission. So I don't know. I read an interesting article dealing with the cupola on the International Space Station. I know you read about the windows on the space station. It's got four, you know, when they look out of the cupola, there's seven windows, and it's facing toward Earth. So when they float into the tranquility mode module, they can look out this big window, put it two people at one time. But one of the panes was starting to fail on the inside. Let me drop it. So there's seven panes that were failing. One was failing. Number seven was scratched. But it was the inside one. So you have four different panes, and they're designed to be removed. You know, you don't have to do an EVA or anything on the you know, the inside one had some scratches in it, and they thought it might affect the photography, or they wanted to change it out. They did that the other day. No problem. But the way they have it, you know, each piece is like the face of each glass, the perimeter is pushing it against the steel. And they have four of these. So the interior one was changed out. The number seven, which is the round one in the middle, is six other windows, and each one is a trapezoidal shape to it. The center one was scratched. Somehow that got scratched. They had a glass replacement. All done. No spacesuit required. That's the kind of maintenance and things that get done, and that will have to eventually get done on a trip to Mars. So all these little things would have to be thought about. You send extra glass with you to all the way to Mars in case you need a replacement or... back to you, Dick. WS1.
When you're replacing a window on the cupola without doing an EVA, I know you've got a flapping door on the outside that you can close. Is that door on the outside on each one of the windows thoroughly airtight that you can close that door and then replace a pane on the inside? Is that how that happens, Paul? And I seem to remember a guy cranking a knob that opens that outside door. It's hard for me to believe that just by cranking that knob you get a completely airtight seal so you can replace the glass. Wild. Give me some words on that. And boy, if that ever gives you a failure, whoa. If that outside door was not clipped down just right and decided to swing free while you're replacing that piece of glass, you're going to be powerful and happy. For safety reasons, they do that with a spacesuit on? Over to you, Paul, K2RAW.
No, not this one. It was an interior plate, so it's not under any kind of pressure. And the way the design, well, I saw the design, and, you know, each glass, you can imagine, it's got a seat that it's pushing against, you know, the next one is the same way, the next one is the same way. It just, each one has its own individual seat. So it's not glass touching glass. Some kind of a flange that goes all the way around, and another glass, and another flange. It's that type of thing, you know, and each one has a seal. Each one is individually bolted. So, you know, if I unscrew the interior one, the bolt for the interior one, I'm not unscrewing the bolt for the next one, you know. So, no big deal. They didn't need the spaces to do it. So, you know, but they need this cupola. They look out, they can see all the different vehicles approaching the space station. You know, all the vehicles approach from down below, so they're looking toward the Earth, and they get to see this. It's like a control tower for these guys. And in fact, they have the equipment inside it that operates the robotic arm. They'll grab a hold of the vehicle, and then once they have it locked into place, then they don't have to touch it anymore. The ground control at Houston then operates the same robotic arm, and it attaches it to whichever module they're attaching it to. In this case, it would either be Unity, it was Unity, and then, or they could attach it to Harmony, the other module. It also has a berthing port. So, I mean, they've done this dozens and dozens of times. But that glass is, it's interesting that they changed it out.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Maybe one of the supply vehicles brought it up. I can't imagine they have all these panes of glass laying around the space shuttle and the International Space Station somewhere. WS one.
Paul, each of the windows on the cupola, 7 windows total, how many layers of glass is in each one of those windows when you look out of it? Are you looking at 2 layers or 3 layers of glass? Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. 4 layers. Yeah, so I'm just saying there's 4 layers of glass for each window. And each one has its own flange gasket set up. And each one has its own bolt that you can attach, you know, and you work the bolt loose from the inside. And that outside cover, I know that's meant really for meteorite damage type of thing. They thought they were going to have a just debris floating by, they could close that. And the video I saw of them operating that, by the way, that cupola was built in Europe and part of their contribution to the space station. And one I saw was one of the astronauts, Samantha Christopher Eddy, she was operating that thing. And she was turning it, and the whole thing would close very easily. I couldn't believe how easy this thing would open and close. No problem. And when they first installed it, they did one, and then they did the other trapezoidal pane, and then they did the other trapezoidal pane. They did them all, and then that, then finally at the end, when it was completely installed, they opened them all up, took pictures. People that were interested on Earth liked what they saw. It's really something to have that big picture window view of the Earth as you're flying 17,500 miles above it.
Okay, why 4 layers of glass? If I'm taking a photograph of 4 layers of glass, I'm going to get all kinds of internal reflection between those various layers. And if they're not optically flat pieces of glass, I'm going to get some photographic distortion. And with the air pressure pushing against the glass, that's going to make the glass blow outward a little bit. 4 layers of glass. Did they ever explain why so many? And aren't there internal reflections when the sun shines on that cupola? Over your ball, K2RIW.
No, I'm not an optical expert, but I mean, it looks perfect to me. And yeah, they have on the inside, they call it the scratch pane, you know. It's and it has the ambient pressure on the inside, and it has a bolt that they, you know, a series of bolts, and they unscrew it. and then you have the primary pressure pain, and that's, and then, again, that's put inside the structure, and then you get to the cupola's primary structure, and in between those two panes and the next two panes, they create a vacuum in there. So, then the outside too, they just call it a redundant pressure pane, and then the final one is the debris pane, you know, so it gets hit by something. So I suspect they're all made of maybe slightly different substances. The two interior ones, the primary pressure pane and the redundant pressure pane, they're pretty thick. I mean, I don't know how thick it is, but it looks pretty thick when I'm looking at it. And then the thin scratch pane and the debris pane, they don't look that thick. I'd say half their diameter. So I don't know the thickness of the whole setup. I don't have those numbers. But, I mean, you see pictures through it, it looks perfect. So whatever they're doing is right. I'm not sure about if any of these panes are curving or anything. Back to you.
The inner scratch pane that did develop some scratches, do you think that's made out of a tough acrylic plastic, or do you think that's made out of real glass? And if it got scratches, who did that? Did somebody make a mistake and put some scratches on that glass? Over to you, Paul, KQLIW.
Yeah, I looked for that. I want to find out who goofed, you know. Maybe they had something floating around, and, you know, these things... Well, there's things that float around in the space station, and maybe one of the thrusters went on, you know, and, you know, when they're trying to raise the space station, or something might have pushed against it. Who knows? Maybe one of the astronauts fell asleep in there staring at Earth, you know, and it dozed off and scratched something with something. I don't know how that happened. And, I was looking for that information myself. I never did find it. On another related topic, you talked about servicing the Hubble with robotics. It's a long way off, but they just, NASA just undocked a piece of equipment that they don't need anymore that tested all that stuff. The ground control was using the Dexter robotic gadget that's on the outside of the space station. For a couple of years, they were using this equipment. I'm trying to think what the name of that equipment was. It was the size of a washing machine, you know, and it was attached to the outside of the space station. And the tools that they had for it was, you know, this cutting device which cut insulation away from it. You know, they plan on servicing satellites, Hubble, or eventually things in geosynchronous orbit or even low Earth orbit. They need to be able to cut the insulation away. They had that capability, and then they had some other connection that was able to loosen and tighten up bolts of different types. Another thing that they had, they were able to take off caps for these valves, these quick disconnect type of valves, and they were able to plug in. I think 2-liter bottles, they were able to pressurize, duplicating, fueling a satellite in orbit. And they didn't use real fuel, they were using this other, you know, imitation fuel. And it all was very successful, and they finally finished with that project. So they actually deorbited, well, they attached it to the Dragon trunk, and that separated, and they burnt it up in the atmosphere. But they are working on servicing equipment, refueling and working, you know, actually removing panels and things like that. It's all been done, and you never know. It could be an option in the future. But I think they need a lot more work. The dexterity that goes on for Hubble. I think it's...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
So other than that experiment you're now describing, there doesn't seem to be a serious effort to build a repair robot for spacecraft. We've dreamed about building a repair robot to go to the synchronous orbit satellites, and I think that's unlikely. The synchronous orbits are so extremely high and so hard to get there that with all the fuel on board, you'd have a lot of trouble getting to just one satellite. And if you're sending up a repair satellite, and if the cost of doing that is almost the same as replacing the hold-on satellite, and it comes close, then maybe that's the way you go when it comes to synchronous orbit. But for low Earth orbit and medium Earth orbit, International Space Station, Hubble, and maybe some others, I'd like to see a repair robot, but doesn't look like there's one on the drawing board. So right now, if Hubble had a major failure tomorrow, I don't hear the sound of any kind of a repair mission that has the capability of getting there for at least 3 or 4 years. Is that approximately right, Paul? KQRIW?
Yeah, I agree with that. But there is one satellite, I think next year. I'll probably type the wrong letters. RLL, Romeo Lima Lima. I don't know what that stands for. Pair. There's a satellite. I don't think it's in low Earth orbit. I think it's in the Iridium location. So a couple of hundred miles. It's higher than the low Earth orbit. And then there's a satellite that they plan on doing just what I was saying. They're going to go out, going to actually refuel this particular satellite that they want to keep operating. I read about this a couple of months ago, so it's not fresh in my head, but I know there is one out there. I think that's coming up toward the end of next year. It's supposed to be launched on now with 5 rockets. And, it's a NASA project, not private. We'll see. When I see more about it, I'll bring it up on the net. They're definitely going to be doing that within a year or so.
The constellation of Iridium satellites, aren't they at a fairly similar altitude to the global positioning satellites, roughly 10,000 miles? Go ahead, Paul.
No, they're lower. I thought it was 700 miles. And then Eric got on and he confirmed that. He had a more accurate number, but I think it's in that area. Not that high. There's 66 of them. So they were very active, but they're being replaced. SpaceX just launched end of last year. They launched 10 satellites, 10 Iridium Next, they call them Iridium Next satellites. They launched out from Vandenberg Air Force Base. And the first plane, and there's 6 planes that they have to do. So, they all went off successful, and each one weighed 1,000 pounds, I think it was. So it was a 20,000 pound launch from a SpaceX vehicle. Falcon 9 launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base on an inclination. And now they have at least 5 more of those type of launches to go, 5 or 6 more launches. Completed, but that's on delay. SpaceX got pushed behind because of the explosion, and they were supposed to launch, I think, a couple months from now, and now it's put off toward the end, maybe fall or something, for another Iridium launch. Iridium Next, they call it, to replace the existing Iridium satellite.
What's the latest, Paul, on the strike going on at the spaceport in South America? Is there an end in sight, or is that still on some kind of a standoff?
Yeah, my information is probably about a week old. I mean, last week. That's about the last time I read anything about it. Maybe the day or two after that, and it still wasn't resolved. Let me drop it. I don't think I heard the courtesy tone. Now I did. Okay, Kourou, French Guiana, they have unrest. I'm not going to call it a strike. It's more than that. It's not like, you know, one group of people against space agency, European Space Agency. It's unrest throughout the country. So because of that, you know, it's affecting the two airports that they have, and they had trucks blocking the area where you couldn't bring people or supplies into the spaceport. So, I think I would have seen something. Well, this is a holiday. I didn't see much new stuff written today or yesterday. So we'll have to check. Space Flight Insider usually gives you really good information on that. Spacenews.com, that's very good. They give you all the, you know, they'll give you the technical information, all the different flights and the things that they're doing and things that they're going on and proposed flights. But Space News will also give you the politics, you know, we spent $63 billion of American money on the International Space Station. And they'll talk about things like that. And they'll give you the coverage on French Guiana and how they're doing. And probably news will come out on that tomorrow, I'm going to guess. You find that on, it's called spacenews.com. Back to you.
Okay, something to look forward to. As it is right now, I believe a number of launches have been postponed by that action of the residents of French Guiana. And has anybody in the Cape Canaveral area volunteered to take up the slack, Paul? Over to you, K2RIW.
No, I guess if it went on, you would start to see that. A lot of these missions are designed specifically for a particular type of vehicle. You know, it's not that easy to take geosynchronous satellites that are in one fairing on the Ariane 5 rocket that is being delayed. One is for Brazil and the other one is for, I believe, Mexico. But they're separate satellites. They both go into geosynchronous orbit, one stacked on top of the other one. So just to grab a hold of these things and put them on an Atlas 5, it's not doable. The mounting platforms and everything's designed for a certain rocket, you know. The only one that's trying to have that capability, well, actually, we already have that. Cygnus has that capability with orbital ATK. We can switch between the Antares rocket here on the East Coast from Wallops Island, and you could also launch from Cape Canaveral on the Atlas V, which we're going to be doing Tuesday. We have that capability. That you can switch back and forth. So it's starting to become more mainstream, but not quite yet. Well, one company, let me drop it, which is Sierra Nevada Corporation, which is developing Dream Chaser, has plans on launching Dream Chaser on top of Atlas V. I mean, that's a done deal. They will be doing that, and you'll see that probably 2019 or 2020 on their first cargo flight to the space station. But they're making the same capability. They can take that same Dream Chaser spacecraft with wings on it and that's going to land on a runway, and they want the capability of putting it inside an Atlas, inside a Ariane 5 rocket from the European Space Agency and launch from Kourou, French Guiana. They want that capability to launch flights to the European Space Agency. They also have a contract with the United Nations or something. There's going to be a United Nations flight, and Sierra Nevada got the contract for that. So probably 2024 or something like that. Some kind of a satellite that the United Nations wants to put up. It's the first time they're ever going to put a satellite up. So, you know, these contracts are being given out, and they need that capability to be able to switch from one rocket to another. They want to be able to launch from French Guiana or Cape Canaveral. So but not right now. You just can't make that switch. You know, you can't take it and launch it on a Chinese rocket. Back to you.
Yeah, the mounting structure that goes between the payload and the launch vehicle is very different on different launch vehicles. The actual boost phase is very different when you're launching from French Guiana. You're launching very close to the equator. At Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral, you're launching 20-some-odd degrees above the equator. That's a very different launch, very different thrusting required. So unless somebody has done a great big universal design in the beginning, that's not likely. And I think you're telling me that somebody is proposing to build a universal structure of some kind that could go on multiple boosters. In other words, you have more than one choice when it comes to the actual launch as to which booster you use. Has anyone talked about that, Paul? WS2N, K2IW?
Yeah, just SNC, Sierra Nevada Corporation, that launches the Dream Chaser. They're developing the Dream Chaser to launch on Atlas V, but at the same time, they're keeping in mind they're going to create some kind of an adapter. The European Space Agency wants to build it for them. This adapter that's going to, you know, they'll be able to actually put it inside the Ariane 5 rocket. So, you know, I haven't heard SpaceX getting involved with this deal or anything, but I mean, you know, I guess it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to see them get in on the action as well. But I don't know. You know, as far as rockets being launched from French Guiana, right now you have three. And everybody would like to have, every organization or country wants to have three different types of lift vehicles. You want a light lift vehicle, the smaller rocket that you need to put up in space, medium lift vehicle, and a heavy lift vehicle. We have all three. China has all three now. And, you know, India has two different types of lift vehicles. But French Guiana also has it, you know, which is the European Space Agency. They have the Ariane 5 rocket, that's the heavy lift vehicle, big two solid booster rockets on the side of it, and then they have the medium lift vehicle, which is a Soyuz rocket. I mean, they actually buy the Soyuz rocket from Russia and retool it, re-implement it for their purposes, and they launch it out of French Guiana. So that's a medium lift vehicle now. And then they have a light lift vehicle, which is built actually by Italy, part of the European Space Agency. That's called Vega. And Vega has launched, I think they've launched a half a dozen times so far in the last couple of years since they've been active. So they have all three different types of, that means these, all three rockets are being backed up. If they're being backed up, then there's other flights that are scheduled to come after them. I don't know how it affects things all the way down the line, you know, but I mean, sooner or later, if this thing isn't resolved, the plan is to launch this telescope, the James Webb Space Telescope, from an Ariane 5 rocket in Metropolis. So I'm sure they'll resolve this by then, but, you know, that's September of next year. And by the way, European Space Agency, not letting any grass grow under them for their feet by sitting back and leaving these three rockets alone. Eventually, the Ariane 5 is to be replaced by the Ariane 6. So, that's under development. Also, to be launched from French Guiana. Back to you, Dick.
Do you know the approximate launch weight of the payload on James Webb? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, it's, I think it was roughly half the Hubble. Hubble was one, almost, I think it was 30,000 pounds, 32,000 pounds or something. So I think it was, I remember it being roughly half, so I'm going to call it 15,000 pounds. So it's not as much. You know, they managed to cut back weight tremendously, with, you know, by eliminating this gigantic mirror that Hubble has. This whole 18 segment segmented mirror that James Webb has that's going to be all folded after it launches, unfolded. Well, you know, it's all made of light beryllium and doesn't weigh like that mirror does on Hubble. In fact, it's a WS one.
Quite a vehicle. Multiple times bigger mirror and a little bit more than half the weight of Hubble. Good trick. Modern day materials. I'm going to start signing off, Paul. It's a little bit early. I'm a little bit tired. So that was space report number 247. That was TechNet number 1647. Well, the numbers keep adding up. I think we'll be back next week. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. And back to you for any final words, Paul. WS2N, tie the ribbons on it. K2LIW, clear and listening.
Yeah, I know it's a holiday, but, you know, might as well keep things active, you know. How many people are really out there, and they visit everybody, and they do whatever they got to do, and they come home, and they always listen to the radio. That's always pretty good. We'll be back next week, hopefully, and you on with TechNet. 73 Dick, 73 everybody. This is WS2 I'm clear.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
K2RW is still out there. WJ2B for a quick question.
WJ2B, K2RW, go ahead.
I just had a quick question for you. I don't know if you can give me a number off the top of your head, but a typical end connector, you know, high quality end connector on, you know, regular, an RG8 type coax, how many dB of attenuation do you think one end connector would put in line at like 100 megahertz approximately?
Turns out that almost all connectors, Joe, have no loss. Assuming now you've made it out of reasonable materials, Teflon to hold the center conductor in the right place, so to speak. Yeah, you could use a lossy material there to hold the center conductor, and you can make it into an attenuator. But for a rough rule of thumb, all connectors, all adapters have no loss for a very good reason. They have no length. Your transmission line develops loss because it's got 10 feet of length, and you're getting X number of dB per foot. But connectors have no loss. And if you made the mistake of connecting a signal generator directly to a power meter and calibrating it, and then put your connector in between and reattach, I think you're going to measure some insertion loss. Lots of guys have done that. Let me drop. And then just to make sure that you really know what the loss is like, you've got some kind of a connector, and you put two of them in series, three of them in series, four of them in series, and you expect the loss to continuously go up. You do that experiment, the loss goes up for a little while, and then it comes back down again as you add more of these adapters. As you add those extra connectors, you're really lengthening the distance between the end of the transmission line that you've calibrated and the beginning of the power meter head, and you're making a trombone in between. If the output impedance of your signal generator power line and the input impedance of your power meter head was exactly 1:1 standing wave ratio, absolutely no reflection coefficient, you know, minus 40 dB, then adding extra length in between of 50 ohms would make no difference. But there's always a little bit of mismatch. Yeah. There's a little bit of capacitance, so to speak, of the power head. There's a little bit of inductance of the end of the cable on the signal generator. So as you add length, you're getting this conversion effect. And so in a general case, you'll see the power go down and then come back up as you add more and more of them. If you really want a number of the insertion loss, and now we're talking about resistive insertion loss, not just visual reflection, which is not a loss. Let me drop. The only way you can really measure the loss is thermally. Put 100 watts to it for 10 minutes, and measure how many degrees temperature rise you get, and make an estimate as to how much thermal mass you've got there, how much specific heat. So if there's really loss, it'll generate some heat with 100 watts going through it. But if you assumed it's going to be zero, you're within 0.02 dB of the right answer. Over to you, Joe, K2. If you assume it's 0.02, you're close, very close to the right answer. Back to you, Joe.
The repeater's off. I'm over at 375. I don't know if you want to switch over to UHF would be easier, or if you want to stay here. If you can hear me or not, I'll be on UHF 449125 WG.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Tonight at 8:30, welcome to the WQVL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Call my internist at 9 o'clock. I need a prescription
and I have to go there. You know those silly orders by the FDA for a controlled substance?
That's all online now. What the Fed did was prevent people from getting the same narcotic from many different physicians at the same time. Everything's online. In some respect, it does put a lot more control so people don't abuse the system, which is good in that respect.
Yes, it is, but I was under the impression, and so is the doctor, that the law says I have to go see him. He can't write a refill. Like, Xanax.
That's my understanding, too. I don't hear the tone. There's no tone after transmission is complete. It was before.
It's a different tone I'm getting. I think one of the links went bad using the internet. Am I correct in what I'm saying, that he can't write a refill on controlled substances? It's a one time for 30 days, and I have to go to his office.
Yes, that is my understanding also. You have to keep going back, so they can ask you how you're doing, make sure that sometimes they're going to take a urine test, depending on what kind of a doc you go to. There's a lot of scrutiny. There really is. It's a pain in the neck, unfortunately, but that's the way things have gone.
Oh, I know. Well, this doctor sees me, Patty, Jeremy. He knows I don't abuse them. In fact, when he writes a prescription for 30 days, which is a maximum, it usually lasts me longer than that. I don't want to get hooked. But it's a silly war because the druggies are still getting it.
I know. Same thing with handguns. That is trying to take things right away from Americans. And that should ever occur, which I hope not. The only people with guns will be the crooks. It's crazy. I just had one of the other members drop me off an antenna on Friday. I'm so excited to get that thing up on the chimney. I don't remember the company that makes it, but it works 2 meters through 40.
Okay. That sounds good. The radios?
Yep, a lot of radios. It's the squirreliest looking. It's going to be the squirreliest looking antenna in the neighborhood. People are going to probably look at this thing and say, what the heck is that? I'm pretty excited anyway. One of my, one of the doctors is going to loan me his Swan 350. He hasn't brought it in yet. But, looking forward to getting that thing up. I have to get an electrician to run the wire. I think I'll run the cable through the attic and down through the wall. Keep it inconspicuous so it's not, I just don't want wires running around the outside of the house. It's really bad.
You know, I did that same thing when I lived in Whitestone. They came to the wall, and I snaked them down to the basement. It worked great.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a tone coming back now. I have to find out what kind of cable. I want to get one that's going to last a while, one that doesn't have too much resistance in it. I know those are pretty costly, but I want to find out the best antenna that I should use for this.
Andy, probably like I have here, Times Wire, LMR 400.
I said antenna, I meant wire. 400? Okay, I'll look up 400. Does the type of cable depend on how many watts you're going to be using also?
Yes, it does. LMR 400 will take over a kilowatt. The Swan 350 is a very high power radio. It's got 300 watts or something. So you don't want to use RG58, which is a very thin cable, and it's also going to be worthy. And with Times Wire, Times Wire LMR-400. Very good cable.
There are several different distributors. Tech DX Engineering. I know there's a company that specializes in coax and putting connectors on. First thing I'm going to run, I have to figure out how to mount the antenna to the chimney. U-hooks, the brackets are 1.5 inches in diameter, so I have to get the right type of pipe. I have a, looks like a rebar sticking out of the ground behind the chimney, so I think somebody had a grounding rod there before, but it's steel and all rusted. I mean, they're going to have to grind it down or get a copper pipe and pounce it into the ground.
All right, a little bit of work. How secure is your chimney? The reason I ask is, do you know Joe, KG2T, he had a problem with a big antenna like that ripped down part of his chimney in a wind?
Well, I just had it, mortar was loose. Last year I had it, them fix it. They reset the mortar. Not the whole thing, it was just like a quick repair. So I was concerned about that too. Because I don't even know kind of clamps, unless they're, I don't know what kind of clamps to put around the chimney. I'm wondering if I can get something that's some kind of strap that looks similar to the brick color. Or if it's just metal bands that go around and hold it on. So I don't want to start moving bricks around unless I redo the entire chimney.
Like a chimney mounts. Those of the silver colors. They're made out of, I forget what they're made out of. I really don't know. But the bands, the straps.
Top of the chimney sticks out from the wall, so I have to put some kind of a bracket against the chimney that holds the mass away from the chimney a few inches. And there are two brackets, so I have to go online and look at this and figure it out. I have the antenna book too, so that'll be a good source of information. Probably the best source of information you can get to this.
Okay, Andy, well, you have to figure it out. I don't know your configuration. Call DX Engineering.
Will do if I need to. I'm sure they're going to have the right mounting equipment. That's the next project I have to work on.
M2EO, when do you think you'll have it up?
I have to get it up by the end of the month. There's been a lot of stuff at home. My extended family, we've had situations going on. So I've been using my spare time to go to my mother-in-law's and help her clean the house out. So hopefully within the next few weeks.
That's good. Absolutely. You never been on HF?
No, I haven't. So that'll be pretty exciting. I haven't done it once.
I think you'll enjoy it. And, you know, 2015 and 10, not much activity. Because on the downside, there's some spot cycle. But 40 works.
Article in QST, I think, just said that the sunspot cycle has just started to improve. I think we're on an upswing.
I don't know, but that would be nice. By the way, on another subject, my birthday is coming up April 24th. I'll be 67. I'm told that, I didn't check the calendar, but I'm told that's next Monday. Would you like to come here? It's not a party, but I invited Howie, W2HL, and his wife, Ina.
Monday. I appreciate it, Rich. I don't think I'm going to be able to get down there. I'm still helping my mother-in-law. My father-in-law passed away a few weeks ago, and my brother-in-law the following week. We've been helping her out. That's where all my spare time is going right now.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad you're helping. That's good. All right, I'm going to be an old goat, 67.
67's not that old, Rich. You got a ways to go. KD2, yes, why?
Up and to you. Last October, I gave Patty a nice celebration.
That's good. Almost happy birthday. 67. Nah, you're not getting up there yet. I'm going to be at work shortly, so I'm going to sign, Rich. Have a nice day. Thanks for coming in. And don't forget, don't bother Patty till after 9 o'clock.
You get in the routine. Yes, that's correct. See you later, Randy. I hope you had a nice Easter. KD2ESY, M2EO.
M2EO, KD2ESY. Thanks, Rich. Have a good day, too. Fly clear.
Mobile listening.
Hey, Andy.
K2KMB from N12. How you doing, Rich? Good meeting, Evan. That was a great meeting. Back to you.
Hey, good morning, Matt. K2 on your way to work. Where are you now? Because you're breaking up a little bit. I just don't remember that happening, so just where are you located right now?
111, I'm on the east. My setup's going to the western European, but I am more west now.
Definitely like to pick you up, Matt. I'm not sure why. Anyway, where are you heading out? Over to Suffolk Community? Give it a shot, Matt. But I think you said you're on 111, and there are areas on 111 that are problems. But, yeah, try switching over to 85, see if it's any better. Into RBP, K2KMB. You still there, Matt?
K2KMB, N2RB, and went back to 375. Maybe got a wrong PO in the E-phone. I'll have to look at it later.
Yeah, well, that's definitely better, Matt. I don't know if it's that you changed location a little bit in the course of those few minutes. But how would you do the PL? The PL would be set in your memory, I assume.
I don't know what happened. Maybe I was in a bad spot, but I'm back on 375. I looked at my LRU email, Carbon Outlook email. I didn't get any of the stuff you sent me. I didn't get the log, a lot of stuff.
Well, what you can do is, when you get to work or when you have the chance, send me your email address and let's make sure that we have it correct. Because when I spoke to Jerry the other night, he said that he would send you out, send me a copy of the April log. Did you get a copy of the roster?
I did not.
Okay, so send me an email when you get to work, kcknd@limark.org, that's fine. And send me your email address and we'll make sure that that's correct. Because I know I did say to him, to go back and again send you the log and send you the roster. So if you didn't get it, we'll check your email address. You also might want to check your spam folder.
I did check that. I'll see it again. I have another email. My last name. I can send you both. I don't want it to come to both of them. But that was a good meeting tonight. But I want to get an antenna up. The president of Walker put a screenshot. Put up a little bit of antenna. I just have to put up the trees. It's kind of pricey. Give me like $600 to chop the trees down. We need a clear path. So I'm looking home. I'm trying to get placed and on that. So that's what I want to do.
Yeah, Matt, you were pretty noisy on that transmission. And again, I know the areas that you're going to and could be, but usually I don't have this problem with you in the morning, so I wonder if something's loose in the car, the antenna, have you made any changes or anything?
Where I'm at now, I'm on the LA service road by exit 53. That's where I'm at now.
Okay, so that was a better transmission, but yeah, I guess if you were in that area, that little, you have a little depression there out by 52, 53, in that area. So, okay, so I guess it'll get better. You said something about Nick going up there and you wanted to price something. I think that's what you said, but that was lost in the noise, so I didn't hear everything that you said. This is K2KND.
Yeah, what I was saying is I'm trying to get pricing to get these trees taken down that have a clear path. There's a rope up already, 40 feet in, to pull up a G5RV. And I have to clear these trees out so I can put this antenna up.
Now, tree removal has become really expensive, but what you could look at... No, I forget, Matt. Where do you live? No, you're breaking up on that one. I couldn't get where you lived.
Back on 8-4.
All right, still a problem. But what I suggest is the possibility there are still places that sell lumber, not lumber, but logs, fireplace logs. And I used to have a friend that actually would go and clear areas relatively for nothing because he was taking them and selling them at a pretty substantial profit depending on what was there. So you might look to see if there's a local lumber place, I keep saying lumber, but you know, fireplace logs that might be interested in taking down part of your tree, but it would have to be enough to them to be worthwhile. Tree removal is pretty expensive now. I don't know if it's because of insurance problems or whatever, but it's not unusual for some big trees to be $8,000, $9,000, and $10,000 to get down. So you want to be aware of that also.
Okay, E2ESY, quick comment.
Andy, go ahead, and you have Matt on the other side.
Thanks, Rich. Hi, Matt. Andy here, KD2ESY. There's a company called Tucson Gardens, T-U-C-S-O-N, Tucson, I believe. They're on Jericho Turnpike, right in between Woodbury and Huntington, near some animal hospitals, on the south side of Jericho Turnpike. They have an incredible yard, and lots of property, and they store an immense amount of wood, and cut wood probably from fireplaces, but after the storms, I remember Sandy in particular, they must have gone around collecting wood. T-U-C-S-O-N, Tucson Gardens. They rent horses, they teach kids how to ride, and they have the totem poles out front for sale. You might want to check with them to see if they have that kind of a service to clear some wood for you. Got anything there. I gotta run and get myself some coffee. I just came out for a minute and heard the conversation. So hopefully you picked up on that. KD2ESY, I'll be clear. Have a good day. Thanks, Rich.
All right, Andy. Have a good day. Yeah, I'm not sure Matt is just not making it this morning, which is really kind of unusual for you. So I'm not sure if you want to when you have a chance, just check to make sure nothing's loose, antenna, anything like that. This is K2KNB.
I had a vibration, my coax actually came off at a 2 meter 440 size. So I could check that. Can you relay what he said? Because I could copy you better. I missed some of that because I was under the overpass.
No, not exactly. But I think what he said, there's a place, I think he called it maybe Sun, I'm not sure. It's riding stable.